But how exactly?
Afric asked. I don't know. They want someone bigger and stronger than me, firstly. Someone tough. Someone they can rely on when things get messy.
Carrie swiped a tear away with the back of an impatient hand.
Or maybe they just want someone with a sense of humour. I'm too dry, not enough crack.
You're tough, Afric said. You're reliable.
Carrie shook her head. I try, she said. But how can I compete with Niall? He's one of the gang. Everyone likes him.
And that's the key to being a good detective, is it? Afric asked. A popularity contest? That's what it's all about.
Carrie waved a hand at her. You know that's not it, but it's part of it, maybe.
Martin said,
it's not just about the work. They want someone who'll fit in, and maybe that's just not me.
Afric leaned forward, eyes blazing.
You mean they want someone just like them? Is that it? They're looking for a carbon copy of Charlie Sweeney, another member of the boys' club, just because that's what they're used to.
So the question is, do you agree with them?
I don't know.
What don't you know? That you're good at your job? That you're much better at the actual solving of crimes than Niall and most of the rest of them?
Carrie shook her head, but she was listening despite herself.
Afric took a breath. You can't let them put you in a box, she said. There'll always be someone who thinks they know where we belong. And we can either take that or we can fight back.
So what are you saying? That I should make some sort of complaint?
Afric gave a half laugh.
Well, if you want your career to be over, then sure.
She paused. You can't go in all guns blazing. They'll just batten down the hatches and you'll be the bitter hysteric. Even if you get a settlement, which is never guaranteed, you'll be pretty much finished.
I don't want a bloody settlement. I just want to do my job.
Afric stretched a hand across the table and took Carrie's, squeezing it gently.
Then you have to be smart, she said. Play the game. Play along and keep doing a better job than all of them. Eventually you'll win. You just have to be patient.
Carrie stared back at her sister.
What if I can't do that?
You can, Carrie, because you have no other choice.
But in that moment, Carrie didn't feel like she was capable of anything. The thought of going back to the station, facing them all, was enough for her. She didn't have the energy to argue. She nodded and looked down at the remains of her toast. Afric stood up.
I have to go to work, she said.
What's going to happen with the Collins case?
Carrie asked.
I'm doing my best with it, and it's early days, you know. We have time.
She had that look about her, the one she wore when they were children and she was trying to pretend that everything was all right.
What about an investigator?
There's no money for one, Afric said. We'll just have to work with what we have.
But you said you think he's innocent.
Maybe, maybe not. Either way, I'll give him the best defense I can. Sometimes you just have to accept that not everything is in your control, Carrie.
I'll try, but... Afric shrugged. She was trying to act like she didn't care, but for once, Carrie could read her like a book.
It's complicated.
Chapter 14. Afric. Tell me more about Laura, Afric said. She was back in the interview room in Mountjoy Prison, Robert Collins sitting opposite her.
What do you want to know?
As much as you're comfortable telling me. The big things, the little things, what you liked about her, anything you might have disliked.
Robert sighed.
She was pretty, you know. She had blonde hair down past her shoulders, blue eyes. She had a birthmark on her shoulder. She liked to say it was in the shape of a dolphin, but it was more of a splodge, really.
He smiled at some remembered conversation.
What else? What did you like about her?
He made a face.
I don't know. I'm not good at this stuff. I never know the right thing to say.
There's no right answer. Just tell me the first thing that comes to mind.
She was sporty, I suppose. She liked to run and I'm into sports myself, so we had that in common. And I suppose I liked that she was serious about her work. She was training to be a hairdresser, but she wanted her own place one day. Wanted to work for herself.
And you want that too?
He nodded.
I'm not interested in working for someone else for the rest of my life. I've been saving up to buy my own van and tools.
That's great. Good for you, Robert. It came out sounding patronising, not at all the way it had sounded in her ear, but he didn't seem bothered.
Yeah, thanks, he said. With legal fees and whatnot, I suppose I'll have to start again. Assuming I get out of here at all.
Afric hesitated, telling herself not to ask questions she didn't want to know the answer to. You spent your savings?
Well, yeah. Mr. Keyes. You, I suppose. Legal fees, you know. €20,000, gone. Took me 4 years to save that up. I'll have to start all over again when I get out of here.
Do you have any assets, Robert?
Assets? Like what? A car or something?
A car, a house, things like that? He shook his head.
You must be joking.
€20,000. It wasn't enough for a murder defence. Keyes must have applied for legal aid. If Robert qualified, Keyes could end up making tens of thousands on the back of this case. Legal aid barely covered costs for the lawyers who did the job as it should be done. For lawyers like Keyes, who cut corners everywhere, it could be quite profitable.
You know, with Laura, that was where we were different. Her parents have money. If she'd been ready to start her own place, I reckon they would have fronted her the cash.
Did that bother you? That Laura would get a leg up where you had to work so hard for your own start? She half expected him to get angry, to blow up at her. But he just shook his head, and his eyes were sad.
Laura has had an older sister, Louise. Louise is very clever. She's at university winning prizes and that.
Robert waved a hand vaguely.
Laura's parents never stopped talking about her. Louise this, Louise that. Laura always felt like she was a disappointment to her old pair. I think that's why she took the hairdressing so seriously. There's a lot of money in those successful salons, you know. If she had her own place someday, that would show them all, wouldn't it?
Laura didn't get on with her family then?
I didn't mean it like that. She was really close to them, particularly her sister and her ma. It's just, she never thought she was good enough. My dad's dead and my ma's on disability, but...
You always knew they loved you? Afric offered.
Something like that, yeah.
He flushed. They fell silent for a moment. Robert, embarrassed, avoided her eye. Robert, there's something I need to ask you.
All right.
I talked to Dermot Mulvaney's friend.
Who?
The person he was texting that night. The night Laura died. A girl named Sinead Dempsey, do you know her? Robert shook his head. Well, Sinead told me that Dermot doesn't like you. That he was jealous.
Robert snorted. Dermot thinks he's better than me, that's all. It's true that he doesn't like me, but he's not jealous. She got that wrong. He makes a lot more money than that. He's got a job at a big tech company and thinks he's going to run the world someday, and he probably will. He's enough of a prick for it anyway.
She didn't mean that he was jealous about money. Sinead said he liked Laura, and he thought Laura was too good for you. Is that right, Robert? He held eye contact for a moment, then looked away. Afric continued. Because I was thinking about that, and then about what you said when we met last time. You said that Laura was upset about your holiday plans. She didn't want you going away without her.
Yeah.
He couldn't look at her. Afric let the silence sit for a while. Did Laura have reason to worry about you going away without her? He shook his head.
No, she didn't. I wasn't planning on messing around on her. But
you had in the past?
Yeah.
You slept with other girls?
Yeah.
Laura knew? She saw the answer in his face. How did she find out?
Someone saw me in a nightclub, a friend of hers. I was drunk. It didn't mean anything.
And Dermot knew because you brought women back to the flat? Robert nodded.
Look, I'm not making excuses. I know it was shit. But we weren't married or anything. Maybe I should have just broken it off. I tried once, but Laura got really upset, and I did care about her. I know it sounds bad.
Is there any evidence of these other relationships? Robert swallowed.
Some text messages.
And? He hesitated.
A couple of pictures on my phone, like.
Okay. All of this helped their case. If Robert was sleeping with multiple women, it weakened the prosecution argument that he was so obsessed with Laura that he killed her to keep her from walking away from him. Afric should feel buoyed up, not depressed.
It's not as bad as it sounds, honestly.
He said it with such absolute sincerity that it occurred to Afric that Robert either believed it, in which case he had deluded himself, or he was a much better liar than she had thought. Chapter 15. Carrie was too agitated to sleep after Afric left for work. She cleaned the kitchen, finding one task after another until the pain in her ribs forced her to stop. Then she took a long shower, dried her hair, and got into bed, certain that she'd just lie awake, staring at the ceiling. Instead, she fell asleep almost immediately and woke 4 hours later, completely disoriented. She sat up and looked at her watch, groaning when she saw the time. 2 o'clock. In 4 hours, she would have to find the strength to get up and go back into the station, to face all the sympathetic looks. She would have to keep her head up and pretend she was fine with it. Better yet, she would have to find a way to make a joke of it all, to laugh at herself. They'd like that. They'd think well of her for it. Except she couldn't do it. It mattered too much, and the unfairness of it would catch in her throat. And then there was Martin. The way he'd looked at her in that room. He'd been excited. No affection in his eyes, just heat and a sort of sparking anticipation. He'd known she was upset by the news he'd just delivered. Is that what got him going? Oh, God. Carrie turned over onto her stomach and buried her face in her pillow. She hadn't even been able to tell Afric. What if it was all in her head? All he'd done was rub her cheek a bit. Maybe it was his awkward way of trying to comfort her. 15 minutes later, Carrie gave up on sleep, climbed out of bed and dressed. She made some lunch and ate it, then sat and stared out the window. Thought about Robert Collins. Thought about Sean. Until an idea came to her. Maybe there was a way she could make everything all right. Carrie stood, grabbed her coat and left the flat, pulling the door shut behind her. She needed to keep moving. If she thought about this too much, she might lose her nerve. The house on Abingdon Road, Malahide, was hopelessly overshadowed by its neighbours. It was an ordinary 1970s bungalow, its small garden uninspired but neatly tended. The neighbouring houses were, almost uniformly, mansions. Recent builds with vast gardens, pale biscuit-coloured brickwork, and graceful Regency facades. Carrie walked quickly up the driveway and knocked briskly on the door. The woman who answered looked, at first glance, to be in her late 60s, too old to have a daughter of 22. "Mrs. Ross?" Carrie asked.
"Can I help you?"
"I'm sorry, I'm looking for the mother of Evelyn Ross, Mrs. Mary Ross."
Yes, I'm Evelyn's mother."
"Mrs. Ross, I'm sorry to bother you, but I'm a Garda." Carrie took out her badge and showed it to her. Mary was holding the door between them as if it were a shield, leaving only a narrow gap. It looked as though she might press it closed at any moment. "I'm investigating a recent murder and I'm hoping you might be able to help me."
"A murder?"
"Yes."
"Around here? In Malahide, you mean?"
"No, Dublin, in the city."
"I don't know how I could be of any help to you. I haven't been into Dublin since last year."
Mary's brow creased.
"But you mentioned Evelyn. This has something to do with her. Is she all right?"
"She's fine. Sorry, I should have said. I saw her just yesterday and she was absolutely fine." Relief did not bloom in Mary Ross's eyes. She stared out through the gap between the door and its frame, anxiety still creasing her brow.
"What's she done? What's Evelyn done?"
"Could I come inside so we could talk privately?
It won't bother you for very long, only it's a little cold out here.
Carrie shivered and gave Mary an embarrassed half-smile. Mary led the way through the house and into the kitchen. It was a sad place, too clean and tidy. The only signs of a life lived, a few framed photographs showing livelier times, were from the past. It smelled musty even though every surface gleamed.
"Would you like tea?"
Mary asked.
"I'd love some, but please don't go to any trouble."
Carrie sat at the kitchen table watching Mary fill the kettle and wondered where to begin.
"You live alone?" she asked.
"Ever since Matty died. Evelyn was 19. He'd left her some money, so she stayed for a few months until her inheritance came through, and then she moved out."
"Do you stay in touch?"
"We're not close."
Mary brought a teapot to the table, then added tea leaves and boiling water from the kettle. She went to the fridge for milk, and Carrie looked quickly around the room, eager to pick up whatever information she could. There was a wedding photo on the sideboard, a very young Mary Ross in a white embroidered dress, tightly holding hands with a young man wearing a suit a size too big. And one other photograph, Mary Ross and her husband, older this time, standing with a hand each on the shoulder of a dark-haired little girl. It was a formal family portrait. Carrie told herself not to read too much into the fact that the expressions on their faces looked anything but happy. Mary poured two cups of tea, then handed one to Carrie.
"Why are you here?" she asked.
In the face of such bluntness, Carrie found herself speechless.
I'm not sure. I feel like I might be wasting your time."
There was a painful pause, then something loosened in Mary's face.
"You're very young. Young to be a Garda. What age are you?"
22.
"The same age as Evelyn."
"Mrs. Ross, when Evelyn was 16, did she make a complaint against one of her teachers?"
Mary took a breath.
"If you're a Garda, then you must know all about it."
"I only know what's on file, which is that a complaint was made, the accused man was questioned, and then the complaint was withdrawn a couple of months later. There are a few notes that suggest what may have happened, but I really wanted to speak with you about it, get your take."
The notes had also subtly implied that Mary Ross was a reasonable woman to deal with, which was one of the reasons that Carrie had taken the risk of coming to see her. Mary took a sip from her tea.
"And what really happened, according to those notes?"
Carrie felt herself flush. She thought briefly about trying to extract herself gracefully, then ploughed on.
"There was a suggestion that Evelyn might not have been telling the truth. There were inconsistencies, you see, in her account. So I thought I'd come and see you and ask you to tell me what really happened."
"And what does that have to do with a recent murder?"
It was the obvious question, but nevertheless, Carrie cringed inwardly a little. It was one thing to go off in high dudgeon and impulsively interview Evelyn Ross. It was quite another to take a 40-minute bus journey to Malahide, doorstop a witness's mother, and suggest to her face that her daughter might have made up a rape allegation.
"It isn't directly related," Carrie said. "It's just, Evelyn is a witness to this recent murder. She's given evidence against the accused, and I need to find out before we put her on the stand whether or not she's a reliable witness, someone of impeccable character."
Mary laughed, a short and bitter sound.
"You'll be a long time looking for one of them. Impeccable character."
She laughed again, as if the concept were ridiculous.
"I understand, but..."
"She wasn't lying," Mary said flatly.
"Mary, I can promise there will be no repercussions. No one is going to go after Evelyn for something she did 6 years ago."
"I've told you, she wasn't lying. That man, that teacher, gave Evelyn a lift home from training one day, and he sexually assaulted her in his car."
Mary Ross leaned forward.
"Didn't you look him up before coming here? He went to prison 5 years later. He assaulted a little girl. 12 years old.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm so sorry, Mrs. Ross, I didn't know. But you're right, I should have. Carrie wanted the ground to swallow her up. What a fool she had been. So much for her detective instincts. I should go. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me. She stood. Mary Ross half closed her eyes.
I often think about whether or not it would have been different if Evelyn had given evidence against him. Would he have gone to prison back then? Would that little girl have been spared?
Mary opened her eyes.
But she didn't want to go through with it. And I didn't push her because really, what was the point? Chances were the case would have been thrown out, aren't they all? And Matty really didn't want it to go forward, so that was that.
Thank you, Carrie said. I'm sorry to have come and opened all of this up again for you. It must be a painful memory.
Mary Ross pressed her lips together and nodded slowly. Carrie turned to go.
Thank you for the tea. I leave you in peace to the rest of your afternoon.
Aren't you going to tell me about the murder?
Mary said.
Please, I'd like to know.
Carrie sat slowly, her eyes on Mary's face.
A young woman was killed, someone Evelyn knew. Her name was Laura O'Donnell. Laura's boyfriend, Robert, has been arrested and charged with her murder, and Evelyn has given evidence against him. But there are some inconsistencies in Evelyn's statement, so that's why I wanted to speak with you.
What about other evidence? Mary asked. Is there other evidence against him? Other witnesses or DNA evidence? Something like that?
Carrie shook her head. No, nothing of consequence.
Well, he won't go to prison on the strength of one person say so, will he?
He might, Carrie said. It's happened before.
Mary Ross drew in a deep breath, then slowly let it out. She might have been a smoker once, with the way she blew the air out through her lips, as if calming herself.
Listen. Evelyn was telling the truth about the assault. She didn't lie about that. But that doesn't make her a good person. She's lied about other things.
What kind of things?
Everything. Evelyn lies to get her way. She lies because she's bored. She lies because she thinks it's funny.
Carrie held herself very still.
I think that's why he chose her, that teacher. Evelyn already had a reputation by then around the school for lying, for attention seeking. He probably thought he could do what he liked because no one would believe her.
Mary took another sip from her tea.
And he was right about that.
You believed her?
Mary inclined her head.
I did, she said. Matty did too, for all the good it did us.
There was no emotion at all in Mary's face as she looked at Carrie. It was like everything had been leached out of her, leaving her dry as a piece of driftwood lying pale and abandoned on a winter beach. Carrie stared at her, trying to understand what Mary was telling her, trying to read the truth. She was sure there was a longer story here. Mary Ross was a broken woman, and Carrie would have bet a year's rent that her daughter had gotten her there.
Why do you think Evelyn was like that? She asked. Why did she lie?
Mary shook her head slowly.
We never hurt her, never denied her. She came to us late in life and we loved her. I'm sure there'd be some who'd blame me, blame the mother for what her indulgence created. But they'd be wrong, she said. Some children are just born bad.
Carrie took a breath. She knew her next move was risky, but she'd already come so far.
Would you be willing to give evidence in court if necessary? About Evelyn's character? I mean, to give the court your view that she's not, reliable?
No, Mary said. She shook her head. I can't do that.
I'm sorry. I know this must be difficult. But you have to understand, Robert Collins is 22 years old. He's facing a life sentence.
Carrie thought about the way she'd all but laughed at Afric when she'd first come home talking about innocence
and cringed inwardly.
I promised Matty, Mary said. He died from cancer here in this house, and it wasn't painless or easy, I can tell you. When he got sick, Evelyn was indifferent. She lived her life as if nothing had changed. She flew into a rage one night when I wouldn't take her out in the car. I lost my temper and said things I had never said before, things I'd kept inside me for years. Matty heard us, how could he not, when we were screaming at each other? He was very upset. He made me promise that I would always take our girl's side, that I would always be here for her. He said a mother should never say those things about her own daughter. He said I let her down and I let him down, and I promised I would never do it again. And I won't, she said, shaking her head. I won't do it.
They looked at each other, caught in that moment, for what felt like a long time. Carrie didn't know if she'd learned enough, but she knew it was all she was going to get. She stood up slowly. Thanks, Mary, for your time, she said. And I'm sorry if... Carrie shook her head. I'm sorry.
Mary nodded. She made no move to stand, just looked down into her nearly empty teacup. Carrie was almost at the door before Mary spoke again.
Do you know why she stopped it, in the end? Why she withdrew the charges?
Carrie turned.
Why?
Mary kept her gaze averted.
One day, she came to me and asked if it were true that victims of assault have to be anonymous in the courts, that nobody takes their picture and nobody knows their name. I said yes. And that was all it took, really. She was quite keen to drop it after that.
Chapter 16. Carrie. Carrie's shift was due to start at 7. The bus got her back into the city at 6, which gave her just enough time to run home for a quick sandwich, then shower and change into her uniform. By the time she pulled the door to the flat closed behind her and set off for the station, she was feeling more upbeat. Nervous, but optimistic. Charlie Sweeney wouldn't be happy that she had stepped all over his case, she knew that. But he was a good detective. He cared about his work, and more than anyone, he wouldn't want to send a man to prison for something he hadn't done. Charlie would reopen the investigation, and maybe, just maybe, he would be impressed enough to offer her a second chance. Carrie squashed the thought, pushed it down deep inside her. This wasn't about her. Carrie reached the station at 5:45. She went looking for Charlie straight away, and was directed to the canteen. She took the lift up 2 more floors. The place was very quiet. Only one person behind the counter, cleaning up after the dinner shift, and a couple of senior gardaí sitting alone at tables with coffee and paperwork. In the far corner, seated at a table beside the window, were Charlie Sweeney and Martin Talbot. Shit. Martin saw her coming. He raised an eyebrow and muttered something to Charlie as she approached, too quietly for her to hear.
Carrie, he said, how are you?
There was wariness in his eyes, caution in his tone. I'm fine, thanks, Martin. I'm sorry to interrupt. Charlie, would you have a moment?
You want to speak to Charlie?
Yes. Sorry, Charlie, if you don't mind. Martin exchanged glances with the other man, then stood.
Well then, I'll leave you to it.
Carrie stood back to let him leave, and he gave her a wide berth. Charlie pointed to the chair that Martin had just vacated, and she sat down. He looked at her dispassionately.
What can I do for you?
He said. There was a half-empty coffee cup in front of him, and he took a sip, eyes holding hers. It's about a case, she said. One of yours. That surprised him.
One of my cases?
Yes, the murder of Laura O'Donnell. Carrie took a breath, steeling herself.
My sister, Afric, is one of the lawyers defending Robert Collins. She talked about the case and I got curious. I know I shouldn't have done it, but I spoke with Evelyn Ross. She's the one who claimed to be best friends with Laura, that Laura confided in her. And I just had to tell you that I think she's lying. They barely knew each other. They'd only met about 6 weeks before the murder, and according to Sheila Carmody, they didn't get on. They were both trainees competing for a permanent job at the salon. She was almost babbling now, the words coming out too fast. Charlie flushed. He leaned forwards across the table.
Sorry, you did what?
He was loud enough that heads turned in their direction. I know it was way out of line, Carrie said, and I know you don't know me. We haven't worked together, but I never do this kind of thing. It's just, I can't help but wonder, if she is lying, then why? What is she trying to cover up? So I just thought I would take it to you and then step away.
And then you'd step away? How bloody gracious of you.
Charlie swallowed, then lowered his voice.
Tell me, Carrie, when you decided to have these little chats with my star witness, did you caution her? Did you tell her that she had a right to see a lawyer? That what she said could be used against her in a court of law?
No, but it wasn't...
He cut her off. No, you didn't. So not only did you stick your nose into a case you don't understand, but you did it badly.
I thought that...
Don't interrupt me!
He hissed at her. His eyes were narrowed, his face still flushed with anger.
Oh God, this was so much worse than she had imagined.
You think you were out of line? You have no bloody idea. What is it? You've been surrounded by people who've told you you're special your whole life. You think the rules don't apply to you?
He paused, waiting for a reply. Carrie opened her mouth, but she couldn't think of a single word to say, and that seemed to anger him all the more.
You don't need to tell me what the problem is. We've seen it too many times before. You joined the Gardaí, and because you're a woman, you've had a pat on the back every time you so much as farted in the right direction. Your little successes have been praised and your failures overlooked, so you get ideas about yourself, about your abilities, that have no basis in reality.
He stood up, put both fists down on the table, and leaned toward her.
And you know what sickens me altogether? When you get knocked back on your transfer application, instead of taking it like a man and getting back out there and proving yourself, you decide to piss all over my case and then try to sleep your way to the top.
What? I didn't. That's not...
Stay away from me and stay away from my cases.
He stalked away, leaving her shattered, pale of cheek and aware of the stares from the few officers left in the room. She took a breath, then another. Under the table, she clenched her fists. She was reeling, that was true, but her eyes were bone dry.
Chapter 17. Afric.
Afric was walking from court back to the office when Carrie called her. She answered and kept walking, one hand holding her phone to her ear, the other tugging her heavy wheeled court bag behind her.
Carrie? Afric said. Are you all right?
Yes, Carrie said. She cleared her throat. Yes, I'm fine. She didn't sound fine. Her voice was raw and strained. Afric slowed to a halt. Foot traffic flowed around her. Afric looked toward the river on that grey Dublin day and suppressed a shiver.
What's going on? She said.
Talk to me about the Collins case.
What? What do you want to know?
I want to know that you're going to win.
What's going on? You don't sound like yourself.
Afric pressed her phone harder to her ear, but heard only silence.
Carrie, talk to me. Tell me what's happened.
I went to Charlie. I told him what I'd done. He was furious. He wants me out of the Gardaí.
Afric closed her eyes. Oh, God. Oh, Carrie.
It was stupid. I know it was stupid. I just wanted to make things right, but I think... Someone's been in his ear. He was already thinking the worst of me. And then I just gave him more ammunition.
Carrie sounded utterly defeated. Look, maybe you need to give it a bit of time. The guards, they're a big organisation. Keep your head down, do good work. You'll get another chance.
It was a lie. Afric was lying to her sister.
If Carrie had pissed off the wrong person, there might be no way back for her. But Afric was thinking about Sean, and she was afraid.
Listen, Carrie said. He's not going to do anything about the case. He's not going to interview Evelyn again, or check the CCTV footage from the pub, or anything. So what are we going to do?
There's nothing else for you to do. You need to let all that go and concentrate on fixing your own situation.
You haven't sounded very confident. About the case, I mean.
Carrie, Jesus, let it go. You can't take all of this so personally. I'm sorry I ever dragged you into it. You need to leave it.
What if you used me?
Sorry?
As a witness. What if you called me as a witness for the defence?
Carrie,
I can't let it go. I don't think he did it. Think about Sean, Afric.
Robert Collins is not our brother. He's nothing like Sean. And I can't even say for sure that Robert's innocent. Neither of us can. I think the evidence to prove his guilt isn't there, but that doesn't make him innocent.
Afric, he didn't do it.
You don't know that, Afric said firmly. You don't, Carrie. We might think he's telling the truth, but neither of us have any proof of that. If you want to know what I think, I agree with you. I think Evelyn Ross is probably lying. But guess what? She could be lying and he might still have done it. So what are you going to do? Throw away your whole career? Get yourself charged with obstructing an investigation? You need to stop now. You just need to stop. Don't you care about it, Afric?
Afric swallowed her fear and her frustration.
I care about doing the best job I can, she said cautiously. But the system is much bigger than me. If I get too close, if I live and die by every case, then it will break me, Carrie. I'm a good lawyer. Some of my clients, they're lucky to have me. I'm no good to anyone broken.
Well, Carrie said, maybe that's the difference then.
What?
The difference between our jobs. You can't care, and I have to. Because it's my job to catch the bad guy, Afric, so that the next Laura O'Donnell doesn't end up in the river.
And she hung up.
Chapter 18. Carrie. Friday, 5th of November, 2004. Carrie sat on the canal wall opposite Evelyn Ross's flat for a long time. It wasn't indecision that kept her there.
She knew exactly what she was going to do.
There were times when you couldn't control the people around you, when no amount of persuasion could stop them from hurting themselves or other people. Sean had taught her that lesson long ago. He'd been a good big brother, guilty of nothing more than being young and stupid, of wanting too much to be liked. So he got into a little bit of trouble. Just the kind of stuff you grew out of, if you're given the chance. He was always the class clown. He stole booze from their parents, just a little bit from every bottle in the cupboard, from whiskey and vodka to the aging limoncello right at the back, and mixed it up in one bottle, then gave it to some older kids at a school party. When one of those kids ended up in hospital getting her stomach pumped, it was Sean who was suspended from school. Once on a dare, he stole a bike. It had been a stupid prank. But once the initial thrill had worn off, Sean had been too afraid to bring the bike back. Desperate not to disappoint their parents again, he had hidden the bike at the bottom of a ditch as far from their home as he could manage. He was caught anyway. One of his friends dobbed him in. And that little incident was his undoing. 2 years later, a car was stolen and found burned out in the same ditch. Between its theft and abandonment, the car was taken on a joyride around local country roads, along the way hitting and killing a teenage girl who was walking home from a babysitting job. Fingers were pointed at Sean straight away. He was 17 by then, known to like cars and to drive a little too fast. And that ditch, which was down at the end of a country lane, accessible only by a farm gate?
Well, Sean knew all about it, didn't he?
Rumours flew. Sean was arrested and questioned by the local Gardaí, then released. There wasn't a shred of evidence against him beyond supposition and gossip. He wasn't even charged. But that didn't matter. The Gardaí had been less than discreet when they had brought him in for questioning, and the damage was already done.
In the eyes of their friends and neighbours, Sean was guilty. He lurked at home for 3 weeks, hiding from people, sinking lower and lower into depression. Carrie had tried to help, but she'd only been 13, too young to understand that he needed more than she could give. Sometimes, when he would let her, she would sit on the floor beside his bed and read to him. She'd started with her favourite books, then moved on to his. Books by Ian M. Banks and Ursula Le Guin. She hadn't understood everything she'd read, but the worlds conjured by those writers were extraordinary and vibrant. They came to life in that quiet room and gave them both somewhere to hide. On the fourth week, someone threw a brick through their front window. The next day, Sean walked the 3 miles to the ditch where the car had been found and hanged himself. The real culprit was never found. Sean's death was like a cancer that ate away at the heart of their family. It had taken Carrie a long time to understand that his death hadn't been her fault. No, that tragedy could be laid at the doors of others. The Gardaí who had questioned him so publicly and who fanned the flames of rumour. The friends who had abandoned him. And, more than anyone, the thief and killer who had left that girl to die on the side of the road. Sometimes, when Carrie couldn't sleep, she thought about that person. Wondered if they had gone on to do worse, to leave a trail of destruction in their path. Carrie couldn't have saved Sean. She knew that now. It wasn't within her power. This time, though, it was different. She wasn't a child anymore. But Carrie was honest with herself. What she was about to do might very well mean the final nail in the coffin of her career. More importantly, if she screwed it up, it could mean a long jail sentence for an innocent man. So she sat there, on that cold wall, with the damp leaching through the arse of her jeans, and took some time to think. She thought about Evelyn Ross, a woman who liked to be in the middle of a storm. Evelyn was lying about Robert Collins. The question was, why? For the attention it brought her? Maybe. But Carrie thought there was more to it than that. If she was right, proving it wouldn't be easy. Evelyn Ross wasn't the type to break down in tears because Carrie came at her with the truth. She wouldn't roll over because someone got in her face or pointed out the inconsistencies in her story. Carrie would have to do better than that. Just before lunchtime, Carrie stood up and crossed over the road, then knocked on the door. Evelyn opened it. She was wearing skinny jeans and a navy striped t-shirt and was barefoot with painted toenails. Evelyn, how are you?
Oh, hi.
A big, bright smile.
I wasn't expecting you.
No, I know. I'm sorry to just rock up unexpectedly. Do you have a few minutes?
Sure, sure. I mean, I'm just doing my nails, but if you don't mind that.
Evelyn waggled a hand in Carrie's direction, then led her into a warm little kitchen. Nail polish remover, cotton pads and nail polish were all laid out on the table. Evelyn sat down and picked up the polish.
Actually, do you mind if I read something to you before we start?
Carrie pulled a piece of card from her back pocket and showed it to Evelyn.
Sorry, I'm just starting out as a Garda. We're supposed to read these at the beginning of every interview. I should have done it last time we talked too. My supervisor gave me a bit of a going over afterwards.
Oh, was he your supervisor? That tall guy? I wondered why he didn't say much.
He's not the chatty type, unless he's given me a lecture on process and procedure.
Carrie flashed a rueful smile. She read the caution from the card in the tone of one reciting a lesson.
You are not obliged to say anything unless you wish to do so, but anything you say will be taken down in writing and may be given in evidence.
Evelyn looked amused.
That's what you have to say? It must be very hard to get suspects to confess if you say that. Wouldn't it put people on their guard?
Carrie sighed as she put the card away in her back pocket.
It does, but you know, it's supposed to really. There are a lot of rules about talking to people these days. We're supposed to just put all our cards on the table. No messing around.
Evelyn laughed.
Not like in the good old days, you mean?
Carrie gave a pained smile.
I suppose.
She watched as Evelyn unscrewed a bottle of dark red polish, withdrew the brush, tapped off a bit of excess polish
and painted her first fingernail in one swift, skillful stroke.
"So what's up?" Evelyn said.
"I wanted to come and talk to you, woman to woman. There have been some developments in the Robert Collins case. It seems like some of the evidence, well, it doesn't quite stack up. And anyway, I wanted to talk to you myself because men don't always get it, you know the way."
"Sure," Evelyn said, her brow slightly furrowed.
"I was wondering if you were ever told Robert's side of what happened in the bar that night."
"No."
"See, that's not right. They shouldn't have kept things from you. You're right in the middle of this case. It doesn't make sense to be keeping secrets."
The furrow on Evelyn's brow deepened.
"What did you say?"
"Well, he says he did fight with Laura that night, but not about breaking up. According to Robert, he was going to go on a lad's holiday to Ibiza with his friends, and Laura didn't want him to go. He says she was drunk and loud, and when he wanted to leave, she held on to his wrist, and when he pulled away, she fell over because she was off balance and a bit drunk, you know. He says he helped her up, and then he left because he'd just had enough."
Evelyn made a scoffing noise. She carefully painted another fingernail.
"Well, he would say that, wouldn't he? He has to say something."
"Sure. But the thing is, Evelyn, his friends all back him up. They'd already paid a deposit for the holiday. And between you and me,"
Carrie lowered her voice,
"they say that Laura was very jealous. Very possessive."
Evelyn blinked.
"Well, I suppose he might have booked a holiday. That doesn't mean that was what they were fighting about. And he'd hardly tell his friends if he was hitting his girlfriend, would he?"
Carrie shook her head. "No, that's true. But it's enough to have my boss asking questions. He's interviewed Laura's other friends. You know, checking to see if she had told anyone else about her problems with Robert. About wanting to break up with him."
"Oh, well, you know, Laura didn't really trust anyone but me with that kind of stuff. I think with everyone else, she felt she had to keep up a brave front. She could be very proud."
Evelyn blew gently on her painted nails. Carrie nodded. "I'm getting that about her. Proud, jealous, very competitive. She was the kind of person who liked to win." Evelyn's eyes flicked up and to the left.
"That's true, I suppose. Though I don't like to speak ill of the dead."
Carrie let silence fall between them. Evelyn moved on to the next finger. Her hand was still perfectly steady.
"It's odd, though. Robert said he'd never heard Laura mention you, even though you were her best friend. And Laura's other friends, they don't really know you either. And according to them, Laura was mad about Robert."
Evelyn shrugged.
"I think everyone has home and work friends. Maybe Laura didn't talk about me because she liked to keep everything separate."
Carrie nodded as if that made sense.
"But why do you think she didn't tell them the truth about Robert?"
"Well, I couldn't tell you. Except maybe that was down to her pride thing, like you said. She didn't want to let them know her relationship was a mess."
"Yeah, I can see that." Carrie waited, gave Evelyn a moment to feel like her ship had steadied, then waited a moment more. Just long enough for her to wonder what was coming next.
"There's one big problem, though, Evelyn."
"Oh, what's that?"
"Robert's defence team has been out there, searching for evidence to back up his claims, which is fair enough, of course, it's their job. But they've found CCTV footage from the fish and chip shop downstairs from his flat. We missed it because the camera is one of those hidden ones and no one thought to ask the shop owner. Anyway, it seems the camera footage shows Robert coming home at 10:30 p.m, just like he said he did, and leaving the next morning to go off to soccer."
"So?"
Evelyn said.
"I mean, he could have climbed out the window at the back or something. He probably knew about the camera. Maybe he set it up as an alibi if he knew he was going to kill Laura."
She turned limpid eyes in Carrie's direction.
"That's good for you, right? That would show he planned it. And that's worse than just doing it spontaneously."
So much worse, Carrie agreed. I mean, self-defense is obviously the only time it's actually okay to kill someone. No one can blame you if you're just protecting yourself.
Carrie sat back in her chair. She put a bit of warmth in her voice.
Did you read about that woman who killed your boyfriend in California? It was in the papers again last week. They arrested her and charged her, but she got this rock star lawyer and he was just brilliant at making everyone understand what she had been through. And she was acquitted. She even got a book deal and there's talk of a movie next. But anyway, that's self-defense. Killing someone accidentally, you can still get in a bit of trouble for, but it isn't too bad. And after that comes a spontaneous killing, and then the bad one, an actual planned out murder.
Evelyn started on the last finger of her left hand. This time, the line smudged.
Damn it,
she said. She reached for the nail polish remover, wiped away her mistake, and started again.
So anyway, with all of that, my boss has the whole team out again, searching along the canal banks, looking for anything we might have missed. They're interviewing everyone at the bar as well, looking for anyone who might have seen you and Laura together.
If the whole team is out there, why aren't you out there with them?
Carrie made herself hesitate. She looked down.
Well, I think I should be, she said. But, you know, maybe I'm just a little on the young side. I have to prove myself a bit more first.
They've left you out?
Evelyn said. She looked interested, almost pleased at the idea.
Not all the time, just a bit on this case. I think it's because...
Because of what?
Well, maybe because I can see your side of this, that's all. Maybe it's because I'm a woman and we're the same age. They think I'm too sympathetic. But I think I can see things that they can't. I mean, men just don't understand the way women can be sometimes.
That earned her another eye flick.
Sorry, what are you talking about?
With Laura, I mean. People think she was perfect just because she's dead. But that doesn't mean that she was a good person. You know what I'm saying. I mean, if she was jealous and possessive and violent with Robert, what was she like with everyone else?
Slightest of hesitations, but Evelyn couldn't quite resist.
Oh, she was far from perfect.
Right, said Carrie. But my boss went back to the bar. He spoke to the barman and tracked down a few more witnesses that we missed the first time round. And the lads aren't telling me everything, but... Listen, I really shouldn't be telling you this, but I overheard enough. And now they seem to think that you might have done it. Killed her, I mean.
Niall says they've found a blonde hair or something that they're testing.
Don't ask me. I don't really understand that forensic stuff. But they've all got a bee in their bonnet about it.
Me?
Evelyn was holding the nail polish in her right hand. A droplet of polish formed and dripped onto the table.
I've always felt that there are good people and bad people in the world. And the awful thing is, so often, bad things happen to the good people. Have you ever noticed that?
Evelyn was staring at her now, her fist clenched and the polish of her nails smudged so that it looked like she had blood on her hand.
Yes, she said, I have.
If you're special, there's just so much jealousy. So many people trying to pull you down, to make you ordinary, just like them.
Yes!
Carrie filled herself up with sincerity, with empathy, until she felt like she was soaked in it. She leaned forward.
Laura was jealous of you. She saw you were better than she was. That you were going to get the position at Carmody's. Maybe she was jealous of other things too. Of your looks, your popularity. She knew she could never measure up. Maybe she was upset about Robert. And she was drunk.
So when you left the bar, she followed you.
She followed you and she tried to hurt you, didn't she?
There was a pause. Carrie felt like she was holding her breath. Like she was perfectly balanced on the top of a wall that stood on a high, high cliff, and the merest
puff of wind could push her in one direction or another.
Yes,
Evelyn said. And Carrie breathed again.
Epilogue. Afterward, Carrie called for backup and took Evelyn with her to the station. She booked her into custody and, for the second time in as many days, went looking for Charlie Sweeney. This time he wasn't in the canteen, but was sitting at a desk in an open-plan office. Half the detective squad was within earshot. Carrie placed the tape on the desk right in front of him.
What's that?
He said. Evelyn Ross is in custody, she said. I've arrested her for the murder of Laura O'Donnell. That tape has her confession. I've listened to it and the sound quality is excellent.
She paused. And now I'm going to get on with my day and do my job. If you want to pull me in for disciplinary action, I'll be on patrol. You'll get me on the radio.
She leaned in.
But don't think I'm going down without a fight.
Charlie did come to find her the following day. She was at home, on a day off. Afric was there too. They were watching TV in front of the fire when the knock came on the door. Carrie opened it.
Oh, she said. He looked her up and down. She was wearing jeans with no socks and an ancient REM t-shirt, her hair pulled back in a ponytail.
I can come back another time. I just wanted to talk to you away from the station.
It's fine, she said. Come in.
She stepped back, led him into the room, and made brief introductions. Afric gave him one of her, you don't scare me, looks, and disappeared upstairs to the mezzanine, where she would no doubt listen to every word said. It took him a minute to get started. He looked around the flat, soaking in the details. He looked at their bookshelves, their ancient TV, the Avoca blanket thrown over the back of the couch that their mother had saved for and given them for Christmas. Carrie wondered briefly what conclusions he was drawing from it all, then wanted to smack him and tell him to keep his eyes to himself.
I listened to the tape,
he said.
That was a good interview. You did a good job.
Yes,
Carrie said.
I interviewed her again myself. We've gone back to the pub to Laura's other friends. There's more work to do, but we've already asked the DPP to drop the charges against Robert Collins. He's going to be released today, 3 o'clock. I thought you'd like to know.
Carrie swallowed. She held his gaze, determined not to look away.
Don't get me wrong, he said. You still cross the line. You're a uniform. You don't get to go off half-cocked interviewing witnesses based on nothing more than your gut instinct.
There was a noise from upstairs. It sounded like a dropped book. Charlie's eyes flicked upward and he shifted his position on the couch, pitching his voice a bit lower.
But I was frustrated when I spoke to you in the canteen. This quota stuff, whatever you want to call it. And I'd been told... Well, never mind. But what I heard on the tape, I think you've got the makings of a good detective. So I wanted to come here today and tell you that I'm sorry. And to give you a bit of encouragement, like...
Carrie was quiet for a long time. Then she leaned forward.
I don't want your sorries, and I don't need your encouragement.
She stopped, searching for the right words, for a more diplomatic way to express what she felt. But nothing else came, so she opened her mouth and let the words out.
I just want you to get out of my way.
That afternoon, Carrie and Afric walked together to the prison. The walk took them down Gardiner Street, with the faded grandeur of its Georgian terraces, then down through the knot of streets that led out onto the North Circular Road. It had been raining all morning, but the clouds were parting now. The sunshine had little warmth to it, but it was welcome all the same.
How did you do it?
Afric asked.
Get her to confess, I mean.
I lied to her, Carrie said. Told her we had CCTV footage that proved Robert had come home that night. Told her the whole team was working hard to track down other evidence. That they'd found a blonde hair on Laura's body.
And that was all it took?
Not exactly.
They walked on for a moment. Carrie took a deep breath. enjoying the chill freshness of the air in her lungs. She felt lighter, freer than she could remember in a long time. Evelyn Ross didn't want to be left alone. If all she'd wanted was to get away with the murder and live her life, then nothing I could have said in that room would have made her confess. But she's the kind of person who always wants to be at the centre of something, for all eyes to be on her. I gave her a way to make that happen. And she thought she was about to be caught, of course. Carrie nodded.
There's that too.
She gave her sister a sideways look.
Sorry I lost you your case.
Afric nudged her, hard.
Please.
They fell silent for a minute, kept walking until they passed the Mater Hospital on the left-hand side. What are you going to do now?
Afric asked. What do you mean?
About work, about policing.
I'm not giving up if that's what you're asking. I think I'm good at it.
Afric paused. I think you are too. They reached the prison. Do you want to go in? Afric asked. Carrie shook her head. They waited on the other side of the street.
Will his family know, do you think, that he's being released?
I don't know, Afric said. Maybe, if someone called them. Maybe not. At 3:05, a bus pulled in down the street. Two people got off. A woman in her 50s, a young man in his 20s. The woman was heavy set, limping, leaning on the young man, but still driving the pace, hurrying toward the prison. Carrie and Afric watched as the side door opened and Robert Collins stepped out, blinking into the sunshine.
Rob! Rob!
The woman freed herself from her helper, stumbled the last few steps forward, and embraced Robert, clinging to him. Soon all three of them were hugging, weeping, holding on to each other as if their love were the only thing keeping them standing. Carrie and Afric stayed where they were, watching. Carrie blinked back tears of her own. After a moment, Afric took her hand and squeezed it gently. Let's go home, she said. And they did.
This has been an Audible Studios production of The Sisters, written by Dervla McTiernan, performed by Aoife McMahon. Executive producer, Elizabeth Scholar. Producer, Kat Lambricks. Copyright 2019 by Dervla McTiernan. Sound recording copyright 2019 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.